What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the JTS Podcast. My name is Marcus Modi, alongside my partners, Patton Cook and Gabe Jones. We're doing a quick turnaround here, giving you guys a new podcast, because we got quite a few topics that we didn't talk about on the last podcast that we're going to talk about on this one. So first up, we're going to talk about the bank robbery, the legalized bank robbery, as Floyd Money Mayweather. His name is Money, so you already know he about them dollars. As he fought in the exhibition match against Logan Paul, it went the full distance, 8 rounds. Guys, was you guys entertained by it, or was you laughing at how easily done Floyd robbed Showtime and the people of their time and money? Even the celebrities that went to the fight as well was upset, paying $12,000 for a ticket, waiting to see Floyd knock him out.
Well, for me, I was can't say I bought this pay-per-view. I also can't say that I didn't watch it, so you can kind of connect the dots where you will there. But this fight is kind of what Floyd, to me, this makes him, I think, the greatest boxer of all time, because he fooled about a million people into buying this pay-per-view. That's the number that's coming out right now. So that's 50 million off the pop that's going to Mr. Mayweather. And credit to the greatest businessman of all time, because he fought a YouTuber and he's getting 50 mil out of it. So that alone just kind of tells you the kind of man that Floyd is. He can con people into buying these fights. The Conor McGregor fight kind of rings to mind as well. The whole narrative that it only takes one punch from Conor McGregor. Conor got one or two of his one punches in, and it still didn't really matter. Floyd, of course, winning in the later rounds quite easily. And this fight is a bit weird for me, because Floyd, unlike the Conor fight, he has been retired for a number of years at this point, even though he stays in the gym and he's not got the beer belly, if you will, but he's still an athlete. And he went out there in the first couple of rounds, I think you could just tell that he's hoping, one, that Logan would kind of tire himself out, or two, trying to get a feel on how good this kid is. And wouldn't call him good. I wouldn't call him the worst boxer in the world I've ever seen. I've definitely seen some worse boxers than Logan Paul out there. But this fight was always going to be going one way. Floyd really not going into second gear. He did just enough to get the win, didn't exert himself that much. And without a scratch, he kind of buffers that bank account of his just a little bit. And I think in 2 or 3 years of time, we might get another YouTuber fight from Floyd Mayweather, this time in his mid-60s. So I look forward to that fight in a couple of years' time. But for Floyd, credit to him. For Logan Paul, I can't say this isn't a bad result for him. He didn't get knocked out. He went the full rounds. He kind of gets to tell himself that he won the fight, even though it's pretty clear he didn't. But I say credit to Logan Paul for stepping in there with the greatest boxer of all time. He didn't look too out of place in the fight, and I think there's something to be said about for that.
I think that he didn't look too out of place, because he does have some skill. He definitely has some skill, but also weight classes are a thing for a reason. In the fourth round, Floyd was going at his head. That man was definitely trying to get a KO, but he didn't. He landed a couple of punches. But whenever you have that extra body weight, you can absorb some of that. Logan, he did a pretty – I mean, he tried to get at Floyd as well, but obviously it's Floyd Money Mayweather. A dude might not get touched by a bullet, you know what I mean? but I think that the result was what we expected. I think that the fans – I know that they call it a robbery, and it kind of was, but it's entertaining. It's entertainment at the end of the day. Fans wanted to see it. We want to see what if. We just wanted to salivate at the thought of what if this random YouTube dude knocks out the greatest boxer of all time. Can you imagine the swag and the talk that Logan Paul would have like after that? I mean, there would be nothing that anybody could ever say to this dude ever again, ever. So, I mean, it's all entertainment. We want to see it. We like seeing crazy freak shows. So, it was good. It was good.
One thing I will say, before this fight, Floyd said that he retired as a fighter. but he didn't retire as an entertainer. That was the first line of first setup to know that shenanigans was gonna happen. My second thing is there's a video going around saying making it seem like Floyd might have knocked up Logan Paul, but he went to go hug him right after that hit. It's circulating around the internet. That's your decision if Logan actually got knocked out or not, because he did go face first into Floyd, so we never know. Three, if you really thought that Logan Paul, who lost to a YouTuber, had a chance against the greatest defensive boxer of all time, you are out your mind. Just plain and simple. This dude only landed 28 punches through 8 rounds. That was the statistics. 28. Now you'll get it. What was it, like 7 for 71 with his jabs? You know, every guy that's into boxing knows the jab is supposed to be your most accurate punch. And it was nowhere near. I'm sorry, Logan didn't have a chance. Jake Paul, you can say whatever you want, saying that your brother won. I commend you for standing up for your brother, saying that he beat Floyd Mayweather, but he lost. Just plain and simple. This is an exhibition, though, so they're not going to count that against either one of those guys. But we all know Floyd easily took that dub, and he was laughing afterwards. He was smiling. He knew he was trying his best just to know that he walked out that ring. Didn't get knocked out. Just got, 30 to 50 million easily. Just chilling. Probably training for, a week, if that? Because he knew that Logan Paul wasn't just that trained boxer. Like, how his earlier, not even four years ago, Conor McGregor was 2016. Man, that's, so we're talking about more than 7 to 8 years ago when he actually had his last fight. Man, time is flying. But,
man.
Mayweather, hey, that was a little bit too easy for him. Hey, that's another thing we got to talk about. Chad Ochocinco's fight against Brian Maxwell. I think that was probably a better fight than the Floyd fight. It's just that Chad got knocked down, but he ain't pulled no Nate Robinson, though. I commend him for that, hopping right back up really quickly.
Yeah, he did. He was quick on it. Chad Johnson, impressive. This guy, Brian Maxwell, I believe that's his name. He was 0-1. He was a bare knuckle fighter. So he wasn't like just a professional fighter coming in. I mean, I guess he is professional. Technically, he gets paid to fight, but wasn't like a Canelo Alvarez or something crazy like that. He was just like a guy who gets paid to fight. And Chad Johnson, he trained. You could tell that he trained. He was active. He got after him, and he just so happened to get clipped, but he got right back up. But I mean, I was very, very impressed by Ochocinco. Would I pay to see him fight, or do I think he should make a career out of boxing? No, I think that he did a good job being a borderline Hall of Fame receiver. Yeah. But yeah, I'm impressed. No Nate Robinsons here.
And two things for me on Chad Johnson. His head has taken enough of a beating from the NFL career. I'm not sure the boxing career needs much more. I will say this. I don't know about you guys, but I find this whole kind of movement into boxing a bit odd from these athletes. And really, before you'd see them move into golf. Now we're shuffling into boxing, and I find it I don't really know the word for it. It's an odd move, especially when a lot of these athletes, it's a taxing sport already, but when you're coming from your former profession, especially football for some of these guys, I would think you want to settle down a little bit. But I kind of applaud Chad Johnson for looking to fight. I would not pay for any of his fights. I think him being on the undercard is just fine. It gets him the quote-unquote clout that he needs to kind of buffer his name just a little bit. He's on that fight, credit to him. But I will say this, Marcus, you mentioned the conspiracy theory going around. I would ask, what do you think, if anything, does Floyd kind of gain from, because I will say this, if anything, it looked like Floyd was holding up Logan Paul. I think it was kind of, did you think there was maybe an agreement between the two? Hey, wink, wink, I'm not going to make a meme out of you in the boxing ring. Do you think that was happening? Because That video you're talking about, the more I look at it, the more I question whether or not this was, whether the bank robber you were talking about is a little more factual than I maybe gave thought
Oh
to at
yeah,
first.
I definitely think that Floyd, because one thing what I noticed throughout that fight, I don't think Floyd threw more than a 1-2. I don't think he went, because you know how boxers, they can go into their combos and get 3, 4, 5 out. He didn't do that on Logan. I think he realized early on that he wasn't gonna be able to keep up with Logan, wasn't gonna be able to keep up with Floyd's speed, so he just only did a lot of 1-2s, maybe a 1-2-3 at most. But he wasn't just slinging like you would see him doing in a regular fight. Did they talk about this beforehand? Hey, that's the decision on whoever's. I can't. I'm not gonna say he did. I'm not gonna say he didn't. That's all I'm gonna say, because that legalized bank robbery is all I'm gonna say. That was factual for sure.
And I'm for one, am not. This is kind of going off a little bit of a tangent, but I prefer Conor McGregor to stay in the UFC. I prefer Francis Ngannou to stay in the UFC. I get these kind of gimmick fights; they're good for what they are at first, but when we start to make a habit out of them, I'm going to stop. That my kind of attention span is going to go down less for less. Gabe, I don't know what you think about this, but I think
Hey,
for right now, it's good what it is. But I would not look to explore this any further if I'm Showtime.
Tyron Woodley is fighting Jake Paul.
True.
So, hey, we'll see. Will that sh should that be the dotted line after that fight? Should that be the dotted line? Depending on the outcome, that's for you to decide. What you think, Gabe?
Nope. It will continue. It's too much money in it. People want to see it. People are going to pay for it. So they'll do it. I mean, golf, how long do you have to practice golf to even be decent at golf? It's a long time. I'm not saying that you. It's easier to practice boxing, but I think it's a little bit more fun. You know, you always see celebrities put out their little videos of them hitting pads. The pads aren't hitting back, they're just hitting the pads. So they go out there, make a little money, hopefully not get embarrassed by Nate Robinson, take home a payday.
Hey,
So, yeah.
I will say this. If anybody want to offer me up $10 to $15 million for a fight, hey, I'm training. I'll go ahead and
Come
start training.
here.
I will go ahead and start training now. I know it's a little boxing gym near where I'm staying at right now. I will go train now. Give me 2 to 3 months and I will be ready. Showtime,
Exactly.
any pay-per-view, I don't care. I can be on the first fight. I don't care. You can give me $2 million and I'll be satisfied. Not even 2 million. Give me 200,000 and I'm satisfied. I'm ready. I'm ready.
I
Put your boxing
personally
skills on loud by $1,000.
would like to throw my hat in the ring for a celebrity boxing match with Draymond Green. I will happily go in the ring with him and kind of tout my differences with Mr. Draymond. I'm kidding, of course. He would end me in a few seconds. But I think we all can think of that one athlete where we think I'd get in a boxing ring with him just for a couple seconds to let out the frustration. What happens after that, I'm not too sure. But Mr. Draymond, my people be with your people, and we'll stay in touch.
Oh
Nah,
man.
I ain't going to the professionals. Nah, I need somebody like Brian Maxwell. I can't do no Draymond Green. I ain't taking no chances. I don't even want to mess with
Right.
Trae Young, let alone Draymond.
You wouldn't take Trae Young? I think I would do Trae Young.
Hey, all I know is those guys be benching a lot more heavier weight than I do. I can't risk that right now. I have to
All right.
train for that.
All right.
Hey, I would want to get paid, but I also got to be logical, and that's something that hey, I'm not risking it. I'm not trying to be Nate Robinson out there. If I get, I'll yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. If I get knocked out, I get knocked out. But I would pick my fights. That's the thing,
Hey,
ladies. Pick your fights.
40 mil for a toxic for a Tyson KO, bro.
Oh,
No, I'm gonna
Stanford.
have to take the dive, bro. I'm like, oh.
But also, you gotta think that Tyson KO might come with some major injuries.
Man, that's why I'm gonna take the dive. That's what I'm saying. He swing. He might connect,
See,
but he
they're
might
not
connect
gonna
to an
give
arm, and I'm going down.
You got to be in the ring for a certain amount of time. You can't go in there for 5 seconds and then just go down.
What you mean? He had about 12 fights that was 5 seconds. I mean, it was ended, people.
Yes, that's just yes, yes. But you can't take the dive right post. Before he even throw the first punch. You're gonna be going like that one dude that just walked out the ring after the start of the fight. You can't do that.
Oh yeah,
you're gonna get paid. You can't get paid like that.
Yeah, that was wild. Oh, let's man, speaking of not being able to get paid, Naomi Osaka.
Yeah. We're not gonna say it like that, but she did withdraw from the French Open. It was this past week and a half ago when she did withdraw, and it was due to mental health reasons. And yes, the French Open did fine her. Yes, she did pay her money. Also, other people start chipping in and supporting her. I just wanted to get you guys' take on that. And first, from coming from her as well, and just how the situation unfolded, I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on it.
Go ahead, Pat.
This is something that I kind of feel pretty strongly about, just because right now the whole mental health awareness, it's been at the forefront for a lot of athletes, and you're starting to see it more and more with one of my more favorite players, Kevin Love with the Cleveland Cavaliers, came out a few years ago and just said that he just wasn't in a good state of mind, and kind of came out and wrote his own piece in one of the student or not student, but athlete ran kind of magazines. And you kind of see this with Naomi, and her whole point was, which just wasn't comfortable kind of going and speaking to the media after matches. And it just felt like for her mental health, she didn't feel like she needed to do that. And I think a lot of these, as all three of us are wanting to get into this business of the sports media, one thing you can say is it is a bring you up to tear you down industry. And not only a year or 2 years ago, Naomi was the poster child of the sports world. They were so happy for her to kind of, she looks like she's going to be the next kind of Serena Williams, if you will, kind of be that next superstar in the women's tennis game. And they were building her up. Well, now that whole building up has been torn down. And I think it's an absolute disgrace from the sports media. And I think all three of us can agree, if we can make it into this business, we want to be different. I think we all know these athletes, although it does look great on the outside looking in inside, the amount of pressure and the amount of people that are around you, surrounding you, the pressure you've got going into matches and even after matches, kind of the thought process of, I've got to keep this up for someone that young. I need to keep this up. I want to be the best of all time, et cetera, et cetera. And it just kind of becomes too much. And that is her entire point. And I'm with her 100% on that front, because we've seen too many kind of suicides. And I know that's a word that doesn't like to get thrown around too much, but mental health is nothing to joke about. And even though one person may look happy and kind of bright on the outside, inside, you just don't know. And I think we all, as a human race, kind of need to figure that out, because I'm sure all of us know someone who's dealing with that or is kind of sadly taking their own life. And we just need to kind of be better as a media perspective and kind of understand that if someone needs a week, 2 weeks, the whole I'm here so I won't get fined thing, that's Marshawn Lynch is joking, but I think that's kind of the same thing he was talking about too. He's not just a big fan of getting grilled by the media and et cetera. So all that to say, I'm with Naomi on this one. I hope she can kind of get back into her own good mental health. And I'm sure she's going to take as much time as she needs. She has got a bright future ahead. She is in no rush to kind of get back out on the tennis court. But one thing I would say for the sports media, let's back off a little bit. Let's understand that these athletes, although they do have some good, a lot of kind of benefits and privileges, this isn't an easy life they live. And I think we need to understand that.
Should she have to do interviews? No. I don't think anybody should have to do anything that they don't want to do. But should she? I think she should. Players, professional athletes, they live a life that most of us will never understand. The fame, the notoriety, the millions and millions of dollars made playing a sport. That is a life that most of us will not, the majority of us will never understand. But that's the reason for the interviews. We, as a people, want to know what's going through your mind before the game. Are you having butterflies? What's going through your mind after you lost the first set? How did you motivate yourself to come back and get the win? Those are the things that the people want to know. And those are the things that basically grow your sport. Without the media, the sport wouldn't be as big as it is. LeBron James would be a 6'8" giant dude dunking on people in a park if there was no media to film it and put it on for the world. So that's kind of the give and take of sports. Yes, some people were kind of harsh saying, oh, it's your job, you should do it as a part of the sport. And it is kind of harsh, but in a way they're kind of right. Because like I said, if there was no media to cover it, if there were no way to video it and put it out there for people to see, then you'd just be good at a sport that nobody is watching. So I think, once again, I do think that it's good that she took a break for her mental health. Do whatever you have to do for yourself. You come first. But at the same time, it hurts. It in fact hurts your sport if you're not doing interviews and whatnot, because those are the things that we love. Imagine, you remember 2016, Stephen Curry on the podium with his daughter. People love that. People ate that up. That helps grow the sport.
I agree with you, Gabe. It's the thing was, for me, like, initially, a lot of people started just bashing her and whatnot. And a lot of people don't understand how anxiety goes. A lot of people don't understand that true definition of depression, because yes, everybody gets sad, but a lot of people really don't understand what a person goes through internally. And you got to think, a lot of these athletes, they're in their mid-20s. They're from 18. Certain sports can go as low as 16. Certain sports go from 18 to late 30s. So they're the same age as us. It's guys right now making millions of dollars, the same ages as us, with pressure that is nowhere near where a normal person could understand. Because just think, for in this case, Naomi, she's 21, 22, somewhere around that area age, right? She's going out in front of millions of people playing at a high level. She loses, it will be people that will bash her. It will be people that have spite towards her. It will be people that look down on her just because of this, that loss. If it was an upset, or somebody put money on it because it was gambling, it's going to be always people that's going to be for her, and it's going to always be people that's against these athletes, no matter what. And then the media could play a role in it as well. Us three guys, we are all trying to get in this sports media business, so we know certain questions that shouldn't be said be asked to these athletes. Just plain and simple. And there's plenty of videos where athletes are just like, did you really ask me that question? Or like, what? Like, really? And sometimes we got to filter what we ask. And I'm all for Naomi sitting out, taking care of her mental health, because a lot of people, like, they really don't understand how mental health goes for people. And people cope with their mental health differently. It's some people that work, just workaholics, some people that just need their space and time. And it varies for each and everybody. Even for me, I'm not going to lie. It's just a lot of people just got to understand where people coming from with anxiety, with depression. And because if not, you will never see their side of the story. And not understanding their side of the story can force you to have a lot of assumptions on somebody that's they don't want to intend to. And a lot of people, a lot of athletes, a lot of people, they struggle communicating with it as well. And so if they know that people are going out and they're going to bash them for this decision, it's going to force them to be like, all right, let me just take a step back even more at it because I don't feel comfortable with it. That's why I commend Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan, and other athletes like that who step up and come out talking about their mental health. Because a lot of people, it's just a really tough conversation to have because it's a lot of putting a lot of trust and faith to come out with those stories, come out with those statements. It's really brave and courageous, I would say that.
And I will say this, I think eventually, and I think she will say this, eventually she wants to go back to doing those interviews. But I think when you know you're not in the state of mind to go out and kind of face the media, I don't know. I just think at some point you got to understand that maybe it's okay for them to maybe just take a day off. But when I wasn't a big fan of the Tennis Federation, they come out pretty harshly and say, we're going to fine you and we're going to suspend you if you don't start doing interviews. And I get their best interest in trying to grow this sport. But at the end of the day, I just have to say, me personally, I'm not watching the French Open if it isn't for Naomi Osaka. And I think there's something to be said about that. I think they need to understand that for the best of this sport, not only now, but for the next 10 to 15 years, they need this young girl to kind of be who she can be. And if she is not in the state of mind to do that right now, I think they really should have given her a day or two. I was a bit surprised on how swiftly they came with it, but I do agree with Gabe. Naomi does have some responsibility to grow this sport to be as big as they can, because not only is she kind of a prominent player for young girls in the Black community to look at, but also in the Asian community as well. I think she is going to play in the Olympics for Japan this upcoming Olympics. So she's got a lot of pressure on that front to grow the sport, not only here in America, but over in Japan as well. So I see both sides. I see Gabe's point. I just think maybe shouldn't have been as swift with the punishment maybe, but I get it that they're looking out for their best interest, but it's a tough situation. And I think it's one that needs to be talked about. And I credit her for kind of opening up, because it would have been easy just for her to withdraw and say, just wasn't feeling it. But she kind of spoke out, and I say credit to her for that.
Indeed. I wonder if she would have played, if she could just avoid the interviews, if she could just play and avoid the interviews, would she have done that? I would assume so, because I think she just didn't want to deal with the media criticism and all of that. But like I said, I guess she did the right thing in withdrawing completely, if that was the case. If she couldn't play without having to do the interviews at the end and she didn't want to do that, then if that would be a part of her job, then right on, withdraw. But it would, like you said, Patton, she'll be here for the next, 10 to 15 years. It would be unfortunate if we got to miss watching that greatness because of, you know, whatever issues are going on, because she's made a lot of money. She could retire today and never work again in her life. But yeah, hopefully that is not the case.
She is 23. I stayed 21, 20. She's actually 23. But this is what a small quote from what she said. She's just she said, I am not a natural public speaker and get huge waves of anxiety before I speak to the world's media. I get really nervous and find it stressful to always try and engage and give the media the best answers that I want. So it's just her getting back comfortable is going to be really the thing, because you the social anxiety hits a lot different, especially with coming from an athlete, when they are supposed to talk 2-3 times, it could be a day at that. So it's just going to be a tough task. I think the Tennis Federation is going to have some kind of compromise with Naomi, because yes, I know coming from Gabe's standpoint, they're going to want her to do interviews, but they got to make sure that she's the most comfortable. If it don't have to be right after the match is over with. If it's later on, give her time to calm down, relax, and then do the interviews. Just do what's best comfortable for her and the athletes moving forward. That's another thing that you got to realize, that when you came out with that statement, the day afterwards, you're not just doing that for just Naomi, you got to look at the entire everybody and then moving forward with your future, because the future, you want to keep this sport going. You got to make sure that even your future players be comfortable with this if they're dealing with the same social anxiety problems.
And one thing you hear a lot from kind of, we're starting to see it more in the college sports, is that a lot of these kids are getting media training. And I'm sure she's done that, and I'm sure she has done some of that. But I would kind of point towards that you're seeing more and more now. Kids in high school, they're starting to learn how to talk to the media and how to kind of jostle through questions and how to weave in and out of the pressure of going up to the big bad sports media when it can be pretty grueling sometimes. So I'm sure she's done a little bit of that, but that's just something she's going to get comfortable with more and more. She hasn't been too long since she's broken onto the scene. And when she's been giving interviews, it's been maybe a 3 or 4 year period, if that, since she's been doing that. So she's going to kind of just, I think, get better at it as time goes on and get more comfortable with it. And I hope that for the best of them, because I think she is going to be the face of tennis once Serena has officially retired. And I look forward to seeing more of it.
We're going to send it to a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about Patton's Titans getting that trade done. And then also Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love. And then also give y'all guys a little playoff update in the NBA. We'll be right back here with more Just Talking Sports. Welcome back to the second half of our show, as we're going to start off in the NFL, as the Tennessee Titans make their official trade for Julio Jones. It was a second round pick, and they got a sixth round pick, giving up a absolute robbery, honestly, for me. This is mind blowing, because this is just my take on this, because I was thinking about this a lot as of late. Two things with this trade. For one, it's really strange for me with these premier all-pro receivers and you not being able to get first-round picks, an example of DeAndre Hopkins and others, and Julio Jones. It's just strange for me. But when it was draft day, you will trade a first-round pick to move up, get a higher pick in the first round, but you know a guy that's been in the league for 7 to 8 years, multiple pro bowls, all pros, having 1,000-yard receiving seasons, and you're not getting a first round pick out of there. That's strange. It was strange for me. And then two, did the Buffalo Bills pay too much for Stephon Diggs? Because they gave Minnesota the first round pick, I think a fourth round pick, and a fifth round pick, if I'm correct. Did they pay too much? Because, yes, Stephon Diggs has the same resume, not as much as those two guys, but has a similar resume to DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones. But Julio didn't get a first round pick. DeAndre Hopkins for sure didn't get a first round pick. Like, come on now. It was just really strange for me. But hey, Titans did a great job not giving up anything, hardly anything, because you know, Patton knows that they ain't been doing the best with their first two round picks. But hey, salute to John Robinson, because he needed to get this one done.
Second rounders have been okay for us. That's been Derrick Henry and AJ Brown, but the first round picks, what can you say? That's all I'll say. Before I get into Julio, I think I have one main point, I think, about why kind of Julio and DeAndre didn't go for first, but maybe Stephon did. I think the contracts of both DeAndre and Julio, they were a burden to take on. For the Titans, this put them well over the cap by about $13 million, and that – really no other team in the NFL, not many teams just have $15 million in cap space laying around. But fortunately enough for the Titans, we had a Ryan Tannehill contract that we hadn't restructured yet. So we got $18 million off of this year's cap. So we got Julio's $15 million fully guaranteed in the cap. So we've got about 5 or 6 more left over to go. Marcus, go ahead and go.
But the thing, that's the thing. You can talk about their cap, but what does that have to be equivalent to a first round pick? Because a first round pick doesn't automatically solidify it's going to be $15 million this for a year. That's the thing that gets me. Well, because,
I will just say, just because the team isn't benefiting as much when it's taken a good chunk of your cap space, that limits you in other avenues. Where with Stephon Diggs, even though whenever Buffalo did sign him, they signed him to a contract, the contract they were taking on to the cap space, I think it was about a $6 or $7 million dollar cap hit to the. So really, what you're looking at, especially with when you're looking at Atlanta and with Houston, the point of view is we are helping you out as well, because that cap space is taken off Atlanta, which they had to do because they couldn't pay any of their rookies if they didn't get Julio off the books. It was absolutely mind-blowing. And the same thing for Houston. They were looking pretty limited in the cap space department, and they ended up – I'm not going to defend Houston in any aspect, so let's go ahead and get into the Julio. I'm ecstatic with what we gave up. I'm ecstatic with what we're getting in a player in Julio Jones, who's going to wear the number two jersey for the Tennessee Titans. I'm a big fan of large men in single digit numbers. I think it's just a great look. I can't wait to see it in Nissan Stadium. I'm going down to training camp here in about a month or so, and I'm going to get a look at Julio in a Titans uniform. But big fan of this. This makes the Titans, I don't think Super Bowl contenders, but I think this well puts us leading in the AFC South. I don't think the Colts have a chance in HE double hockey sticks. I mean, just no way. I think our offense right now, it's too good. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. One thing this team really couldn't do very much of was really stretch the field last year. Even when we had the stack boxes of against Derrick Henry, I don't think you're going to be able to do that against this offense anymore. You got Julio and AJ who can stretch the field. Corey Davis was more of a 10 to 15 yard kind of route guy. Julio, he can take it 80 yards in a blink of an eye, even though he doesn't have the speed that he needs anymore. The breaking of tackles and trying to tackle a man the size of Julio, it is not an easy task. But to your point, Marcus, it's something we had to do. Our second wide receiver was Josh Reynolds. He is a number three at best, and I think he's going to be a very good number three now. But I did not like what our offense was looking like coming in, a new OC and Todd Downing. I think he was going to have his work cut out for him. Now I think he's going to be sleeping pretty well at night. So happy with this move for the Titans, only giving up a second and a fourth, the fourth in 2023, and we're getting a sixth round in return. One thing you can say for John Robinson Company, this is a win now mode. This Julio contract, it's 3 years. We're going to have 3 years with Mr. Don Julio, and I'm looking forward to all 3 years.
Indeed. Now, I think that he will do very well for the Tennessee Titans. Y'all's offense will be amazing. I'm not sure if you're out of the waters as far as competition with the Colts for that division quite yet. We'll see what Carson Wentz is like, and the Colts' defense is amazing. Y'all's defense is not, just to put it nicely. But, no, I believe that this was an awesome trade for both sides, because you can get a fantastic player in the second round. Julio is getting up there in age, and as you said, he has lost some of his speed. He's not the spry young chicken that he once was, and – literally just losses of tenths of a second can make a huge difference in professional sports across the board.
I got a question for you, Gabe. I got a question for you. All right. So how fast do you think Julio can run right now? If it's not the 4.2, if it's not a 4.28, 4.3, what do you think Julio running right now?
Probably still a 4.4. He ain't a 4.5 yet. I doubt it. That'd be slow.
I was going to say, because I think that, what, maybe a tenth of a second? Yeah. I was going to say 4.4. That's pushing it. For I think Julio can still get down the field.
Yeah, but it makes a difference, man, between immediately blowing by a dude and, like, a second then blowing by a dude. That it doesn't take long. It does not take long.
Yeah, you are correct on that one. I also agree with you. I just can't give the Titans just a, like, extreme nod for the AFC South, and I can't give them a Super Bowl contender just because we don't know how that defense is going to go.
Yeah. I do. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good, Ben.
I understand. I understand fully where Gabe's coming from, because that secondary, the secondary was questionable last year. You got rid of those, the old guys, the veterans, and then you're coming in with a lot of fresh meat. And yeah, it's cool and all that you got Jacksonville and Houston in your division. So you can worry. You think your young guys can get through those two. It's just that the Colts team is, I would say, for with Colts and Titans, I think the Colts might be more well balanced on both sides. I will say the Titans have the more high powered offense than the Colts, but the defense, the Colts defense is way more high powered than the Titans defense. So that battle between the Colts defense versus the Titans offense, I'm going to be ready to see that one moving forward. I think the Titans could be around the same seeding as last year, was around that 3 seed, that 3 or 4 seed. I think that'll be that's what will be my prediction right now for the Titans, as they move into the regular season and into the playoffs.
I really do agree. I think this move for Julio, I think it puts us where we are at last year with the losing of pieces and Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. The defense is going to be whether or not I don't think it really matters about the defense. We had a terrible defense last year in the division, and we still won at 11-5. And of course, the extra game added this year will be fun for all of the NFL. But I think the defense is going to be the key whether or not we are Super Bowl contenders or not. I think this gets us at the third seed, right below Buffalo and Kansas City. I just don't see us moving above that unless Caleb Farley and Bud Dupree and Janoris Jenkins, they make the impact that I am praying that they make, because the defense, it can't be any worse, I don't think. I don't think there's been a worse defense that I have seen as a Titans fan, and that is saying something in quite some time. But the offense, I think it's going to pick up right where it left off. Julio is at OTAs right now, voluntary OTAs. So as soon as we're done with this podcast, I'm going to be looking at hours of OTA footage, just 15-second clips. I'm going to look at all of it. I'm going to watch all of it. I'm going to study all of it. I'm going to see how he's looking early on in this one. But I think it's a good sign he's already here. I think there's a motivated Julio Jones who, I think DeAndre Hopkins, he kind of said it, how in the world are me and Julio getting second-round picks? And I think that fueled DeAndre Hopkins last year, and it made him to be, I think, the best wide receiver in the NFL.
Y'all see Jalen Ramsey's comment on how he's like, how the Rams didn't? That's another thing. How did none of the other teams try to go out and be like, a second round pick? Hey, I might as well throw my wide receiver. I might as well make that call to Atlanta. Be like, hey, y'all want a second round pick? We got y'all second and third. Because, you know, the Titans gave y'all a second and fourth. I can give you a second and third right now.
I think the main thing was contract things, because I think the Patriots would have done that.
The Patriots should have done that. What do you?
We should have.
That's the thing. It's these GMs saying they was out of on Julio. Cool. If you're above the cap, but you get Julio Jones, do you think you will be upset?
If you're in the position to win, like just adding Julio to the Houston Texans, that does nothing. But if you're in a position to win, then yes, but you still have to abide by the rules, have to have the cap space, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
My buddy Arthur Smith, he helped us out. Of course, the old Titans OC, now the head coach down there, Atlanta. He gave us a hometown discount. I'd say thank you, Arthur Smith. I forgive you for your disaster class against the Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs. I think this atones for his sins in that department. So I do agree with Gabe on that one. I think it's all about the cap space. But when you are restructuring this contract, this is something I learned a few days ago. This really is going to cripple the Titans in 2024 and 2025, because the cap hit for Ryan Tannehill, I believe, is about 45 or 50 million. It's a win now mode for the Titans. I appreciate that, because as a Titans fan myself, I have not been able to say that very much in my lifetime. We're in win now mode, and that's what we are right now.
Yeah, Gabe. So this upcoming year, Tannehill is only going to make like $10 million, like $10 to $11 million. then it goes like 10 to like 15 to like 30, then like 40. It's like it's a big jump.
Y'all better trade that man to the Lions. My Lord.
Hey, well, matter of fact, let's stay in that division because we're going to talk about the Packers right now and Aaron Rodgers and this Jordan Love situation. Jordan Love, he came out on yesterday saying, hey, he will be ready by week one. They're saying it's a lot of praise right now by Jordan Love on some of the throws that he was making. Davante Adams is in attendance for OTAs right now, but Aaron Rodgers is not. Now, I'm going to start with you, Gabe. Do you think Aaron Rodgers is done or not? Because there's reports that came out that the Packers were trying to bring them dollars to Aaron on his extension for an extension. He just hadn't signed the paperwork for it. So do you think, Gabe, Aaron is done?
Unfortunately, from all the reports of what people say Aaron Rodgers is, how he feels about things, I think that he might be, man. I think that he just might be. Of course, I don't want him to be done. If the Packers are just going to do him dirty and just hold out on him and say, hey, well, we're not going to trade you, fine, you can sit, then I think that he will sit. But that's obviously not what we want to see as sports fans. On the Jordan Love side of it, let's see how good he is. They literally did not draft this man a receiver whenever he just made it to the game before the Super Bowl to get a quarterback. So this dude has to be Hall of Fame level. He literally has to be Hall of Fame level, and I'm excited to see it. So let's see what the Packers do whenever they move on from Aaron Rodgers. But I am hoping and praying that they trade the man away. Get him out of there. He's giving you his time. He's giving you 10-plus years of greatness, and he got it done earlier in his career, and y'all haven't really helped him later on in his career, so why are you mad at him? Why are you mad at him for abusing him? Trade the man away. Give him away. Please. Free him.
See, I just don't agree with the freeing narrative. I think the Packers have done well with Aaron Rodgers. Look at the receivers Aaron Rodgers has had. He's had Greg Jennings, and now he has Davante Adams, I think the second-best wide receiver in the NFL. What more does he want? He has a running back in Aaron Jones. He has Robert Tanyan, a very good tight end, had more tight end touchdowns than anyone else in the NFL. Alan Lazard looks to be a very good slot receiver down. I just don't get this narrative. Look at the touchdowns. Look who he's throwing to.
All right. I want to say this. Is Robert Tanyan going to have a spectacular year with Jordan Love like he did with Aaron Rodgers? Is Alan Lazard going to have a spectacular year like he did with Jordan Love, or was it because of Aaron Rodgers? What I'm saying is before that, those guys wasn't even getting looked at. They were on the sidelines. Don't get me wrong, those guys have a lot of talent, but those guys were living up the big moments because of Aaron Rodgers, not because of the Packers.
Okay, but who cares? When you're winning like Aaron Rodgers was, the Packers didn't lose last year's
more help.
I really do not agree with that one bit. Look at the points they put up last season. I think if anything, the defense needs to upgrade, and that's what the Packers are trying to do.
They just
not by drafting a quarterback in the first round.
They drafted a quarterback in the first round, and also they just lost like half of their offensive line because they went to go pay Aaron Jones. They lost their center. It was their center, and I believe their left guard.
Okay, but let's move past the first round quarterback. That's come and gone. Aaron Rodgers is okay with that. He's okay with that now because he played.
He just won MVP because of it.
Okay, that's fine. But he should be gone now. That should be old news. He played after they drafted Jordan Love. What's the point now of getting mad at the Jordan Love pick 2 years after it happened? I think for Aaron Rodgers, sure, he should get some say into the front office. But I think this narrative that he has been a Cleveland Brown his entire life and hasn't had any help, I think it's bogus. And I think it's an absolute media brainwashing that we're doing right now for Aaron Rodgers. He's won his entire career. He's had great weapons his entire career. Has the offensive line been great? No. But what quarterback has had everything he has wanted his entire career? That jersey that you've got, Mr. Gabriel Jones, over your left shoulder, has Tom Brady had elite wide receivers his entire career? Has he had an elite running back his entire career? No. He has done what he can. He has understand that in the NFL, you can't have everything you want. You've got to sacrifice on some things. Aaron Rodgers, he's just not willing to sacrifice on any front. I get the frustration from him. Do I think he will be traded? I do not. I think the Packers are going to call him on his bluff, and I don't think Aaron Rodgers has the gall to lose out on more than $40 million if he does not show up to one day of this season. He's going to lose out on $40 million. This guy who just got married, he's going to lose out on $40 million. No chance. Aaron Rodgers is going to be in Green Bay. We're all going to be fine. He's going to be in Green Bay throwing touchdown passes. I will say this. And my last thing, and I'll let you go, Marcus. I'm sorry I'm taking up the show here. I think what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now to a young quarterback in Jordan Love, I think it's disgraceful. I think what he's doing to him, I think shame on him. I don't believe it is right for him because he was not having these same kind of discrepancies whenever Brett Favre was in the same situation. I think if anyone, he should understand what Jordan Love is going through, but instead he's making it all about himself. Classic Aaron Rodgers, only winning one Super Bowl, and here he is piping up like he's the next Jesus Christ when he's far from it, I think.
You just spoke highly on Brett Favre. You said Brett Favre wouldn't even let him get snaps in practice in OTAs.
Okay.
You think Brett Favre gave a crap about Aaron Rodgers? No. He didn't do anything for him.
I know. But Aaron Rodgers... Aaron Rodgers should know firsthand how terrible that was for him as a young quarterback. Are you not above that? Is Aaron Rodgers this great disciple that we see on Pat McAfee shows kind of smiling and shooting the you-know-what around? Can he not be a better influence? I'm not a big fan of what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now.
I'm pretty sure that Aaron Rodgers behind the scenes is talking to Jordan Love a lot. But
I doubt it. I doubt that. Seriously doubt that.
I'm going to say he is because I don't you just spoke highly on Brett Favre, and Brett Favre was like a Tom Brady. When first string happens, he was the only one out there, and it was no sympathy towards their backup quarterbacks. Just plain and simple. I don't know about that one. Now, two, I will say for Aaron Rodgers, $40 million is a lot of money, but if he's going to leave, he probably would just said chunk the deuces up, honestly. If you're going to chunk up the deuces, hey, can you really be mad at him? Three, Jordan Love, I think he's going to be a phenomenal young quarterback. But how that roster is set up is to try to win now. And I don't know if they can just win now with Jordan Love at quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. Four, I just don't know how to feel because – yes, you can say with Tom Brady, he didn't have an elite receiver like Devontae Adams, but at least he had guys that we knew you could count on consistently. Outside of Devontae Adams, just this past year, you would think that Robert Tonyan could be trusted on. And the thing was, they in the playoffs, they was doubling Devontae Adams. They was triple coverage Devontae Adams. So the only people that Aaron Rodgers could really just look to like that was Valdes-Scantling, who has been non-consistent. Lazard, who got injured and then just came back, I believe, like the game before the playoffs started for those guys. Robert Tonyan, who really had, outside of those two games where he got – it was three touchdown games, didn't have many touchdowns after that. So it's – yes, you got to put a lot of faith in those guys and your young guys, but trying to get some you don't even have to be superstar talent, all pro talent. Just getting consistent guys, I think, is what Aaron Rodgers needed. And that's why he felt some type of way about even with Jordan Love. Because you got to think, those guys, what was it, second round? I don't think they drafted in the first two rounds a wide receiver this past year, both years. So, yes, Aaron, I feel like Aaron's going to feel some type of way just because you guys aren't trying to get him the necessary help, because we all know you're in draft day one and the beginning of day two, is where you're going to get your stud receivers. The, after date and beginning, after the middle, like if you're going trying to get, it's not that many where we will have those Julian Edelmans of the world. It don't happen that often. You're not going to get a lot of guys that's going to be third, fourth round picks that just going to blossom into great careers. It's not, it just don't typically happen like that. And so if you're a all pro Hall of Famer and you're knowing this, so you're going to have to put in the work. You're going to put in extra work. Look at Tom, actually, right now. Look at Tom Brady right now. Look at the receiving core Tom Brady has right now. Look at the weapons that he has. He has a buffet of weapons in Tampa. You can't, so Aaron Rodgers can't ask for a buffet of weapons when the guy he just went against literally had Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, Gronkowski, and more.
You can't ask for a different team to get that done. That's the thing. So that's why I hope Aaron Rodgers goes to a different team and maybe he can get it done.
But he can't ask Green Bay for more.
Apparently not.
He can't ask his coach to let's go for it on fourth down. He can't ask his coach that down set with down
I'm
eight.
I'm with you, Marcus. Apparently
the
not.
The Hall of Famer can't ask his coach. He can't tell his coach, nah, keep the field goal unit on the sideline. We got this right here. He has no say so.
He can ask all he wants, but whenever the team says no, I think when you go off on a temper tantrum like you're 6 years old, I think that's a little much. Maybe that's just me personally. Maybe I think this whole Aaron Rodgers situation, me personally, I'm not a fan on how he's done it. I think he has not been throwing to chopped liver, if you will, the past couple of years. I think he has his weapons. Could he have better weapons? Sure, but you've got to sacrifice in some areas. And when you look at what the Packers are trying to do, they're trying to build an elite defense to help out Aaron Rodgers on the other end. Can he ask for more? Sure, but I think when he goes off on this absolute tirade that he is right now, not answering the phone calls of any of the Packers front office, I think it's a bit much, me personally.
I would say that the secondary – is elite. That front seven is not just it.
They're trying.
But they already paid. They paid the Smith brothers a lot of money. they're trying to figure out their linebacker situation right now as we speak. This is a prime Aaron Rodgers. You're trying and doing is two different things. you can try and fail. That's the thing. You can try and fail. But is that going to help Aaron Rodgers if you do fail?
So what if you try at the wide receiver position?
When have they tried?
I don't know, but do they need to after your quarterback just threw 55 touchdown passes? Would you say that? I just don't believe this narrative that wide receiver is a need. I think it's good enough.
If you're called a quarterback – and your wide receivers can just catch the ball, then you'll be able to do fine with a solid enough defense. I saw it for years and years in New England. But, no, I think that you still have to try to help your guy. Because, like, we would – for speaking on New England, we would go out and still, like, try to get guys. Like, maybe they would work, maybe they wouldn't. But we were lucky enough to have solid guys in Gronkowski and Edelman to kind of carry the load, or the Wes Welkers of the world or whoever. But we would still go out and get guys not Decker. We didn't get Decker. Who was the receiver that we got from, I think, the Rams? Amendola. We would go out and get Amendola. Guys like that, we would try. I don't see much trying from the Packers on that standpoint.
I agree. I get that.
Yeah, so that's where we stand. Hopefully – like I said, I get your point. I'm with you, Patton. But for the sake of Aaron Rodgers, I hope that he gets out of there.
Okay.
Hey, the Titans, all I'm going to say is the Titans just traded for Julio Jones. Anything is possible at this point.
Anything is possible.
A degree more.
Anything is possible. So let's go ahead and move forward. And let's hit on the NBA right now, because they announced the Defensive Player of the Year and – MVP. They announced the coach of the year. I'm glad that they didn't wait till the award show after the season started. They just gone ahead and dropped it now. But the MVP is none other who is currently now the lowest draft pick ever to win MVP, and that's Nikola Jokic. And the defensive player of the year is Rudy Gobert out of Utah, three-time defensive player of the year now. Guys, I want to get y'all guys' thoughts. Also, want to point out that the Clippers got it done game seven and now playing against Utah. They're actually going to be playing later on after we drop this podcast. But I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on the updates, and the Phoenix Suns is rolling as well. So what y'all thinking after these past couple days for the playoffs?
Well, at first on the MVP, this was one that I didn't think there was much question about. Jokic winning this one, he had a fantastic season. Of course, whenever Jamal Murray, that kind of workload and the kind of stats that he had to provide for his team to kind of continue on rolling, even though they aren't rolling too well right now, he had to do more, and he was there to do more. And I think a lot of credit has to go to Mike Malone, the Denver Nuggets head coach. He kind of scouted this guy, and he's just kind of trusted him ever since. About three seasons ago, he came out and said that this guy can be the MVP. And I don't think a lot of people took him very seriously at that point when you had Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and LeBron averaging about 35 a game. But here he is. And I'm not sure we've seen many more skilled big men at his size, not only height, but also roundness as well. But he is an athletic big man, and when you look at him, you just wouldn't suspect what he can give you on the basketball court, and he can do more. One final thing, and I'll swing it over to Gabe on his kind of takeaways. Derrick Rose getting an MVP vote, shame on the fans for that. That was not a journalist. That was a fan kind of accumulated vote. I think cool, I guess. I don't know. Derrick Rose had a great year this year, a great story, but I think this is why us fans get taken very seriously when we have votes given to guys like Derrick Rose. And that's all I got. I was a little bit disappointed in that front, but the MVP vote, this is one of the more non-controversial MVPs I think we've ever had.
Indeed, I agree. It was basically a given to who was going to win because he was the one that played the most games and he put up excellent stats, like 26, 11, and 8 on 50, 40, 90 dang near. So he was the guy. Defensive player of the year. It was between Gobert and basically like Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons, yeah.
Gobert, his team had the number one seed. He changes every shot that comes inside. I think that he won it deservedly so. He's like the modern-day Dikembe Mutombo. Thibodeau, winning coach of the year. I believe that that is also the correct award. As a matter of fact, every award on the way down, I think, was the correct choice. Marcus is nodding his head. No, my thing for Thibodeau is because we did not think the Knicks would be anywhere near this good. Now, are they this good because they played harder than everybody else? Yes. And Thibodeau made them play hard because nobody saw them winning more than 27 games this year. Nobody. So, yeah, congratulations to him as well.
All right. So what I'm going to say is defensive player of the year with Rudy Gobert. That wasn't even a close. Rudy got like 85 first place votes. I think Ben Simmons only got like 13. That one wasn't even close. Rudy Gobert just getting it done for him. And then I like how they did it. They gave him the award after that marquee block at the end of game one against the Clippers. That was a perfect setup. Nice job, NBA marketing team, on that one. And then two, to piggyback off of what Gabriel Jones just said, the coach of the year should have been Monty Williams. Plain and simple. You're going to say Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks who thought that the Phoenix Suns would be the number two seed? They went 8-0 in a bubble and then come out and be the number two seed and are kicking the you know what out of the Denver Nuggets right now.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, we had them in the playoffs, but what, as a 6 or 7 seed? Not the second seed.
Yeah, no, definitely lower. Definitely lower because of obviously injuries and whatnot. But I think that they have been helped by health. and they played well. They got the addition of Chris Paul. I mean, everywhere Chris Paul has gone, his teams, like the teams have had an immediate addition in wins immediately. So maybe that's more Chris Paul than Monty Williams. But granted, the Phoenix Suns are playing absolutely fantastic. I think that they definitely have a chance in between. Well, anybody can make it out of the West except for the Nuggets.
I got a question. Because the coaches selected Monty Williams, but the media selected Tom Thibodeau. Do y'all think that whoever – I think – me personally, I think the coaches, whoever the coaches pick should be for the coach of the year compared to who the media thinks. Because I feel like it's always been somewhat two different standpoints from how the media – because the media has already chose Thibodeau long before. And I think –
It's the New York market. That's why the media has taken Tom Thibodeau over Monty Williams. I will throw out a couple more names. I know this guy won't get mentioned. I know the talent he's had on the floor, but I think what he's gone through in terms of storylines and kind of shuffling of positions, I think Steve Nash has done a heck of a job for his first year head coaching job. I think what he's had to deal with, a lot of people would have crumbled. A lot of people, when that Kyrie Irving situation came out, then you bring in another guy in James Harden. I think he's made it work. And then Quinn Snyder, number one seed down there in Utah. He has had a heck of a year, and it just keeps on getting better, and they look better and better as after winning game one. So we've had a lot of good head coaching jobs done this season. I can't remember a more kind of balanced year of just good head coaching.
I would have been satisfied if it was Quinn Snyder. Quinn Snyder and Monty Williams, I think, should have got the nod. Not Thibodeau. That's just me. That's just
me. Honestly, I think that is unfortunate that that there's only one coach of the year, because so many guys do very well every year. I think what's up?
Could you look up and see how many Coach of the Month awards that Tom Thibodeau had?
Yeah, I can find that. But while we're on that subject, I think, for example, like 2016, Steve Kerr ends up winning Coach of the Year. He didn't even coach most of his team's wins. They just so happened to win 73 games. But that year, guys like Terry Stotts, because, of course, they always had the Trailblazers out of the playoffs. Guys like, I think, it can be a bunch of guys every year. But Coach of the Year, does it mean much? A lot of guys get fired after winning Coach of the Year. Like, I think at least four coaches have gotten fired after winning Coach of the Year.
Thibodeau didn't even win Coach of the Month once, is what I'm seeing.
Sheesh.
So, come on now, people. And I know Quinn Snyder won a couple of them. I know Monty Williams won a couple of them. Come on now. Come on now, ladies. Come on now, media. We're looking at us right now, because that don't even make sense. How Tom Thibodeau going to win Coach of the Year and didn't even get a Coach of the Month? Steve Nash won. Did Steve Nash get one? Yeah, I believe Steve Nash won a Coach of the Month this season. Come on now. That don't even make sense.
And plus, it was Eastern and Western, so it's not like they were picking one. They were picking two out of one for the West and one for the East. So, yeah, I'm with you, Marcus, I think.
I just value the coaches more. Well, we're going to go ahead and you know what? Let's save the soccer for the next pod. But that's all that we have here on today. We appreciate y'all listening to another episode of the JTS Podcast.